Hi, we are Jetpacks for Sale.
And you're listening to Freeform Radio, 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Mass.
Your mind ain't right. Say your money don't mean nothing if your mind ain't right. Devil coming for ya. Pick up my shovel and I walk to the mine. Said I pick up my shovel and I walk to the mine. When I'm dead, bury me down in the line.
WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, we're going to start things off on the 2nd of May with a shadow. First in a double billing. So let's see.
The shadow knows.
This one, this is, let's see here, The Plot Murders. Original air date on this is the 27th of February, 1938. Starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston in The Shadow, and Agnes Moorehead as Miss Margot Lane. You know, when I listen to this one, screening it, I'm convinced Orson Welles plays the doctor. I believe he's a doctor. Let me see my notes here. Yeah, I believe he's playing a villain. In 1955, he made a movie called Mr. Arcadian, which seems kind of simple resemblance, but here we go.
Telegram from the American Police Review, presenting The Shadow with a special award. Be sure to hear this official presentation at the close of this program. And now, Lou Cole presents The Shadow in The Plot Murder.
Captain Hines, read the findings of this court-martial.
We find the accused, Lieutenant John Wilson, guilty of treasonable sabotage against the government.
No!
In that he willfully destroyed a secret device known as the flying torpedo, invented by one George Arcalis, and acquired exclusively for use by the government.
Has the prisoner anything to say before sentence is pronounced?
Yes. Yes,
but what can he say?
He admits he broke the mechanism on the demonstration torpedo.
Quiet, please, Professor Arcanus. As the inventor, we understand your concern in this matter. But please don't interrupt. Well, Lieutenant Wilson?
I don't know, sir. I can hear all that's going on, but I went into the...
It's obvious, General Levitt, that Lieutenant Wilson is not mentally accountable.
He was sufficiently accountable to enter the testing shed by virtue of his authority as an army lieutenant and to tamper with the flying torpedo and render it useless the very day it was to be demonstrated to the government. Read the sentence of the court.
Lieutenant Wilson, this court decides, subject to the approval of the president, that you will be dishonorably discharged from the service of your country and sentenced to imprisonment for the term
of... No!
Oh, forget it! He's got a revolver!
Don't shoot!
That's the man, Professor Arcanus! He's wounded, Professor Arcanus!
All of us, take Lieutenant Wilson back to his cell.
Preston, I tell you, John Wilson can't be guilty. He just can't.
Why not, Margaret? After all, traitorous army officers are not unknown to history.
Yes, but the peculiar way John Wilson talked on the stand makes me think there's something strange about the whole thing. He acted, well, almost like a man in a trance. Lamont, just what is this flying torpedo he's supposed to have tampered with?
That's what its name implies, a sort of aerial torpedo filled with high explosive, flying under its own power. Once it's launched into the air, instead of flying a predetermined course, its direction can be guided by radio beams from an observation plane flying high above it.
I see.
Imagine its tremendous effectiveness in warfare, deadly accuracy in hitting even a fast-moving target like a troop train or a supply ship.
Sounds tremendously important. Who invented it?
This man Arcalis, who was demonstrated last week at the proving grounds before a large delegation from the capital. Besides being members of the War Department, a great many high officials and other branches of the government were to attend the test.
Well?
Since your friend Wilson gained access to the laboratory and put the flying torpedo out of commission, the test has been postponed until tomorrow.
And who is Arcalis? Where did he come from?
He's a famous foreign inventor. He's quite a reputation abroad.
Lamont, you don't suppose it's possible Arcalis has the boy under some strong mental influence?
It's possible.
They've got Wilson temporarily in the city jail. Won't you call on him as the Shadow?
Margaret, do you honestly think that this case warrants my attention as the Shadow?
Lamont, I don't ask many favors, but I have the feeling John Wilson is innocent.
All right, Margot. You're really serious. The Shadow will pay a call on John Wilson in the city jail. Thank you, God. These parts that General Levitt gave me. Do you take it or do I keep it?
And you better keep it, sir, in case you want to use it again.
Yes, that's right.
You'll have to talk to Wilson through the bars. No one's allowed in his cell.
Thank you. I have no desire to go in. I already have one arm in a sling due to the young man's temper. There's only one or two questions I want to ask him, then I'll leave.
Well, who is it?
You! Arcanus!
Don't get excited, Lieutenant Wilson. I only came to tell you that you're a much better mechanic than a marksman. Your bullet only injured my arm.
I'm only sorry I didn't...
Kill me? The only way you can break the spell I have over you, isn't it? To kill me.
Will somebody come?
Look at my eyes.
No.
Look.
No, I won't.
John Wilson. Look in my eyes.
No!
Look in my eyes, Wilson. That's right. Now repeat after me. I destroyed the torpedo. I destroyed the torpedo. Say it.
I destroyed the torpedo.
Sabotage. Against my country.
Sabotage against my country.
I am guilty.
I am guilty.
And that is all you remember.
Are you sure that's all he remembers, Professor Arcalis?
Who said that? Guard. You are there?
No, not the guard, Professor. He's waiting at the end of the passage.
You hide.
somewhere. In the next cell, perhaps.
No, I'm here. In the shadows, Professor Arcanus. Perhaps you've heard of me.
Who are you?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
Help me. Help me.
I am your friend, John Wilson. Think now. Concentrate. What is it you're trying to remember?
It's that torpedo. Dangerous.
Wilson, keep quiet.
Steady now. Think. Think. You can break through this spell.
I tried to make them understand.
Stop.
I destroyed the torpedo.
I command you to stop.
John. Your friends believe in you. They're trying to help you.
Wilson. What have you committed?
Country. I am guilty. I am guilty.
Oh, Mr. Shadow, whoever you are, you see?
You have a powerful spell over the boy, Professor. But there is a way to break it.
What way, Shadow?
If you don't know, I have no intention of telling you yet.
Yes, at 3 o'clock. The War Department is so convinced your invention will render any nation possessing it invincible that the high command of both the Army and Navy are to be there to witness the test.
The President, too?
Yes. The President and the Vice President expect to attend, together with the Secretary of War and the Secretary of the Navy.
They've fallen into my trap. They'll be blown off the face of the earth just as I planned. Barak, be sure you make a final inspection before the torpedo is taken up to the ground. And see that the steering mechanism is set.
I understand. But since I am your chief assistant, they might ask me to go along with them.
No, they won't. I'll fix that. Their bungling army mechanics think they understand the flying torpedo perfectly. So to satisfy their pride, I've let them take complete charge of the demonstration.
Good.
Don't worry, Barak.
And afterwards?
Afterwards, with the guiding brains of the nation wiped out at a single stroke, the country will be thrown into confusion, disorganized. So we'll have nothing to fear.
I see.
There are only two things that bother me slightly, though. Lieutenant Wilson, for one.
Wilson? Did he really discover the secret trick of the steering mechanism?
Yes, he knows what we intend to do and how we intend to do it.
You should have disposed of him at once.
I thought of that. I was afraid it would arouse suspicion. I'm keeping Wilson under mental hypnotic control until it's too late for him to stop us.
Wouldn't it be better if he were dead?
Perhaps. I can still visit him at the prison.
And what is the other thing that bothers you, Professor?
Only a shadow, Barak. But I'm not quite sure of the extent of its power.
A shadow?
Don't worry. I think I can take care of it, too.
Listen. What is it? I thought I heard footsteps outside in the hall. Go look.
There's no one here.
All
empty.
Must be my nerves. I'll be glad when this is all over.
Our escape is to come, Carter?
Yes, the freighter will be waiting for us at South Pier. But go now, Carter. And success to you.
Good night, Professor.
Good night, Barlow. The shadow. If I can't put my willpower against the shadow, then I deserve to lose. And I've never...
Good evening, Professor Arcalis.
You? Shadow, you've come?
Yes, Professor. Why do you hold Lieutenant Wilson in the hypnotic
I don't know what you're talking about.
We don't see. And now I have something else to tell you.
What?
Wilson knows something about you, Professor. And I'm going to find out what it is.
All right, Shadow. You know a little, but you'll never learn more from Wilson. No one can break the spell. Not you, nor all your childish magic.
You forget. Greater magic, Archelaus.
What?
Death.
Death?
Yes, it's on the way, Professor. But I can promise you this. If any blood is shed, it will be yours. Not the Shadow's.
This is Earl Smithsonian from the Top Hat Plateau Show on WBED. I've always wondered where the radio wave expired. And I found out where. Here on the Grand Hour on WMFO Medford.
Okay, for the first half of our double billing today, we're listening to The Plot Murder. Original air date is the 27th of February. What's my writing say? 1938. Starring Orson Welles and Agnes Moorehead. Didn't really find too much on this in terms of any sort of notes. And it isn't Dr. Archelaus, it's Professor Archelaus that initially, when I was listening, I thought perhaps Orson Welles was doing a double role, but that's next to impossible because it was live. Thanks for listening to the Grand Hour with Arthur this morning. We'll return back to the Shadow.
I tell you, General Levitt.
Excuse me, Constable.
Go right ahead, General.
Hello? General Levitt speaking. Oh, yes. Good morning, Captain Hines. That's fine. You have the flying torpedo loaded and ready for the demonstration? Good. I'll expect a report. Sorry, I can't be with you. Goodbye. Now, Cranston, to get back to this Lieutenant Wilson, I don't see what I can do.
But there may be some desperate plot at the bottom of this. Wilson acts as if he didn't... put under some powerful hypnotic spell. He might know something about this flying torpedo that you ought to know.
For heaven's sake, Cranston, I haven't time to listen to any sort of drivel. I know you're a very agreeable young man and you mean well, but you're letting your imagination run away with you. Now, if you don't mind, I must get ready to leave for the capital.
Very well. Just do me one favor, General Levitt. It might prove something to you.
Well, what is it?
Suggest to Professor Archelaus that he be present with the other official visitors at the proving ground. The demonstration starts.
Of course, Professor Archelaus will be there. Why shouldn't he be?
That's what I'd like to know. Unless I'm very much mistaken, General, Professor Archelaus has made arrangements to be far, far away from the scene of his triumph.
George Cranston, I believe you know something.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah, well?
There are two gentlemen here to see you, sir. Professor Archelaus and another man.
Oh, all right. Show them in.
General Levitt will see you, General.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you, General Levitt.
That's all right. This is Mr. Cranston, Professor Archelaus and Mr. Barloff.
How do you do?
How do you do?
If you don't mind, Mr. Cranston, I'd like to speak to General Levitt alone.
Not at all. I'm sure you have weighty matters to discuss.
Good day, gentlemen.
Thanks, Cranston. Goodbye. Oh, orderly.
Yes, General Levitt.
Is my luggage ready?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Then take the next train. There's one leaving in 20 minutes. Can you make it?
Yes, sir, if I go now, sir.
Go ahead, then. I'll close the office. I'll meet you in the capital tomorrow.
Yes.
Well... what brings you here, Professor? Sit down, Mr. Barla.
Thank you, sir. Barloff here has just returned from the proving ground, General. He supervised the loading of the torpedo early this morning.
Everything was all right, I hope?
Perfect. Your army mechanics seem very proud they're going to handle the torpedo by themselves. Of course, we'll be anxious to know how it comes out.
Oh, aren't you going to be at the demonstration, Professor O'Kennett?
I'm afraid not, sir. Another engagement, unfortunately, prevents my attending.
Oh, yes, I see. But I can't understand how anything could be more important to you than seeing your own invention demonstrated before the highest officials of our government.
I admit I'm terribly disappointed, General. However, I've left instructions for a telephone message to be sent to me at my hotel the minute the demonstration is over.
Hmm. Professor, I'm not sure that this test should be made without your being there.
What do you mean?
Suppose I order you to go.
But no, that's impossible.
Why impossible, Mr. Barlow?
You must excuse Barlow, General Levitt. He is a little excited.
Excited? What about? Look here, Professor Arcalus. Why don't you want to go to the proving ground?
Must I repeat my previous statement?
This stalling and hedging is very suspicious. By George, you'll go whether you want to or not.
Don't touch that phone.
Barlow, be careful.
You can't give me orders in my own office. Huh?
You hit him too hard, Barlow. His head was bleeding.
He struck the desk when he fell.
Yeah, drag him in his closet and open the door.
He knows something, Professor.
Yeah, he fools suspect something, but how?
And we've got to act quickly.
I wonder if Lieutenant Wilson has talked.
Like you said, he's still under your hypnotic spell.
Perhaps it would be better if Lieutenant Wilson died.
Yes. We're going to murder him.
Oh, I merely suggest that he kill himself. Oh, Barlow, if you'll tie up the general.
Professor, look at him.
What? General Levitt. He's dead.
Well, here's General Levitt's office, Margot.
No one seems to be here, Lamont.
Well, that's odd. General was here less than an hour ago. General! General Levitt!
Look, here on the corner of the desk.
Blood. Word to Commissioner Westman at once. Tell him something has happened to General Levitt.
Yes, anything else?
Yes, tell him to send a squad of men to South Pier. I overheard Professor Arcalus and Barlow talking about meeting on a freighter there.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the jail. I'm going to make one more desperate attempt to get John Wilson to talk. You've got to find out what this is all about before it's too late.
So you want me to wait here at the jail, Professor Arcalus?
No, go down to South Pier, Barlow. I want to be alone with Lieutenant Wilson.
Yes.
I'll follow after I've taken care of him.
All right. But first, I'll collect the baggage.
What you remember only this, Lieutenant Wilson. See always my eyes in front of you.
Yes.
You will forever do what I tell you to.
Stop! Leave me alone!
No, never. Look, Wilson. See what I have. A knife. Here. Take it. Now listen to me. You are disgraced. Your family disgraced. You have nothing more to live for. Say it.
I have nothing more to live for. I have nothing more to live for.
Then draw the knife across your wrist.
Easy. Try it.
Stop, John. Don't do it.
Shut him. He's trying to make me...
Keep away from me, Wilson.
I've got you.
Let go of me, Wilson.
Arcalus. Did you feel the knife yourself?
Yes, you've cut me, you fool.
Your blood is being shed, Professor. Remember what I told you.
Let me out of here. Let me out.
He's gone, John.
Something's happened to me. I feel like I can talk now.
Then talk. Tell me what you know. Arcalus' spell is weakened.
I can't see you, and I don't know who you are, but you've got to help me. I first suspected Arcalus and his crowd when I saw that the steering mechanism of the flying torpedo had an extra attachment.
An extra attachment?
Yes, you see, the flying torpedo is supposed to be steered by radio beams from an accompanying plane. But this extra attachment I'm talking about would render the radio beams ineffective. In other words, the rudder is set so the torpedo will fly in a complete circle and come back and strike the point from which it was set, like a boomerang.
If it does that in the demonstrations of today, it will wipe out all the important government officials.
Yes, that's their plan. Just as I made the discovery, Arcalus came into the workshop. I accused him, and he put me under this spell. I tried to talk, but I couldn't.
Never mind that. Now get in touch with Commissioner Weston. Have him go to the proving grounds. He can stop the test flight of this flying torpedo if he gets there soon enough.
The idea of having us wait around here at the South Pier. There don't seem to be anything stirring.
Who are the guys we're supposed to pick up?
Two boys for the name of Professor Arcalus and Barlow.
Foreigners, huh?
Yeah.
What are they going to do, make a getaway?
I don't know. Commissioner Weston just said to make sure we got them, that's all.
If it had been that important, don't you think the commissioner would have come down here himself?
Well, he was coming, but he got a last-minute call to go over the place where they're trying out that new flying torpedo.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. All these inventions.
Wait a minute. I'll be coming down the dock. Hey, you! Hey, stop where you are, I'll shoot.
What's this all about?
Nothing.
Where are you going?
That is my business.
What's your name? Come on, what's your name?
Are you Barloff?
What is it to you?
Answer me, are you Barloff?
Yes.
Well, that's all we wanted to know.
Come on.
What are you taking? I have done nothing.
Hang on, he's got a gun, Sergeant.
What?
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I had to do it.
That's okay. This Arcalus will probably be along in a minute. Put this boy behind those bushes. We don't want Arcalus.
Hey, look out. Here comes another guy down the dock.
All right, quick. Right. Behind this piling here. Come on.
Must be Arcalus.
Yeah, I guess so. Professor Arcalus?
Who are you?
The police.
They want to ask you what...
Well, you can't get me to talk. You'll never make...
Look out, Sergeant. He's got a gun there.
Not that gun,
Arcalus.
Can't
take me. The police can't touch me.
You asked for it.
Oh, you nailed him, Sergeant. You get through?
Oh, I'm okay.
Here comes the parole. Must have heard those shots.
Well, they didn't have time. Oh, Commissioner Weston?
Yes, Sergeant. You got our man.
Yep.
Is he dead?
I don't think so, sir.
Well, Arcalus, maybe you'll talk.
I'll never talk.
Commissioner Weston.
Shadow, what are you doing here?
We can't waste time, Commissioner. Did you stop the test of the flying torpedo?
Yes, but...
Good. Commissioner, you've saved the lives of thousands of spectators. To say nothing of some of our highest government officials.
Then it was you...
Yes. Yes, I had a friend of mine call you. And now, Professor Arcalus, another story. You haven't much time.
I know. I'm dying, Shadow.
It was a plot against our national defense, wasn't it?
It was.
Who employed you to do it?
That I won't tell you.
But Lieutenant Wilson is innocent.
Yes. Wilson is innocent.
Commissioner, you're a witness. Lieutenant Wilson is cleared.
Yes, Shadow.
What about General Levitt?
Barloff killed him.
Where is Barloff?
We got him behind these boxes.
How did you know about General Levitt, Shadow?
We found blood on his desk. But this time the blood is yours, Arcalus.
Yes. Mine.
Well, Shadow, Arcalus is dead.
Yes, Commissioner. You've been instrumental in averting a national calamity. Arcalus is dead. The innocence of Lieutenant Wilson has been proved. And the integrity of the men who protect our liberty is again vindicated.
Okay, that was the plot murder. Again, the original air date was the 27th of February, 1938. There's a police award issued here at the end of this one. I'm kind of under the time constraint. It was a late night with the Royals. Red Sox going into extra innings. And then we're going to jump in to the six shooter here in a minute. But I don't know. At first it sounds like Orson Welles plays Professor Arcalus, but apparently not. He just played Lamont Cranston in The Shadow, and Agnes Moorehead played Margot Lane. I said we're going to start. I got a time constraint this morning because I want to try and get two shows in. So I'm kind of just playing through here so you can kind of get a flavor of vigilante justice in 1938 over the radio and how the police responded to it here with this little award that was telegraphed to The Shadow. So here you go.
Is free to all Blue Coal customers. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barclay. And here's the official telegram advising of the award the American Police Review has made to the Shadow program. Quote, the American Police Review salutes the producers and sponsors of the Shadow for their contribution to the cause of better law enforcement. 13,000 police executives throughout the United States read the review. So our purpose is to help them find the best tools and methods to combat crime. The editors of the review have turned a critical ear toward the Shadow program for some time and are gratified to note that your presentation of police roles truly reflects the intelligence and character of the high type of police officer now found throughout the land. We therefore take pleasure in presenting to you the American Police Review Certificate of Award for Distinguished Service to the Cause of Better Law Enforcement. Signed, J. Norval Birch, editor of the American Police Review, Chicago, Illinois. And so, on behalf of Blue Coal dealers and of all those who assist in the weekly programs of The Shadow, we tender our thanks and appreciation to editor J. Norval Birch and the American Police Review for their splendid testimonial. You have just heard a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in The Shadow magazine. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
Jane Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. Coleman, America's...
As you heard, we're jumping right in to the Six Shooter. This episode is titled The Stampede. Its original air date. Let's see. Its original air date was the 4th of October, 1953. And again, it stars James Stewart. Good old Hal Gibley introducing. You're listening to Arthur. This is the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.
Now, Act One of The Six Shooter. Starring James Stewart.
There were over 400 head in the McAdam herd. 400 white-faced Texas cattle and only three of us to shove them along the trail to Abilene. But the McAdams boys had promised me a tent to whatever the herd brought, so I signed on for the drive. And it looked like I was going to earn the money, too. There'd been a cloud burst the second night out. Now it sounded like we might be heading into some more bad weather. The sky was all black and purple, and the wind began blowing up little balloons of dust. Thunder made the steers restless. They still remember that first storm. They didn't like the idea of going through another one.
All right, come on now. Come on, cattle. Hi-ya. Hi-ya.
I can see the rain now. It hadn't hit us yet. It's still a couple of miles ahead, but I can see it real plain. Streaking down across the sky like little silver lines on a gray blackboard. In the canyon where we were, the sun was still shining. Gave me a sort of funny feeling, rain and sunshine all at once, sort of like being two places at the same time. Right, McAdams, he came pounding up from behind and rained up alongside of me and Star.
Oh, what do you think, Britt?
Well, if that wind don't change, we'll be getting wet inside of 15 minutes.
Don't look like it'll change.
No, pray not.
And I guess we might as well keep on going. It'll be easier to handle if we're out of this canyon when the storm hits.
Yeah.
That'll ride up until north.
Okay.
North! Hey!
Yeah?
Get the light out. Keep moving.
Hurry. Weak enough for you?
Do as I tell you. Stop beeping.
Okay, okay. Come on, move
it. Norm will speed him up, Rich. I'm going back and see if there ain't no stragglers.
Want me to give Norm a hand?
No, no, I can handle it myself. About time he learned how.
All right, you're the boss.
Yeah. Just, keep an eye on him, Rich.
Sure, sure. That lightning had hit a pine tree about 50 yards up the side of the canyon. And when it toppled over, it started a couple of boulders rolling down the side of the ravine towards us. That was all the cattle needed to set them off. One of the longhorns took a look at the rock and let out a bawl that told the other animals to get out of his way.
Hey, stop them, Norm! Stop them before they
get here! Wife circled around and galloped over toward his brother. But Norm wasn't waiting for him. No, no. I saw him head up the slope of the canyon, and it looked to me like he didn't intend to stop anything. All he cared about was getting out of the way. So I dug my heels in the scar's flank, and we rode right into the middle of the herd. If I could split them in half, only part of them would tear loose, even in a stampede. Life was in front of the herd now. The lead steer turned off. A couple of more shots, and the rest of them followed. There we are. I knew there wasn't going to be any stampede. Not now, anyway. I had stopped him just in time. It's night gone, Rife.
Somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Horse pulled. Almost threw me.
Yeah.
Guess you were scared.
The horse?
That's what I said.
Yeah. Well, here comes the rain.
It looks like this is the tail end of it, though. Probably wouldn't be more in a shower.
We better keep moving anyhow. You take over up here, Britt. Norm will ride back with me.
Sure.
Your horse all right now?
I guess so.
Okay, let's go.
About half an hour later, the rain let up. It was nearly sundown, and a green-yellow rainbow arched up over the hills to the east, and Rife decided to make camp for the night. Neither of the McAdams brothers said much during supper, and afterwards, Norm sort of moved off a couple of yards from the campfire and started playing his mouth organ.
What you staring at, Rife?
Huh?
You heard me.
I don't know what you mean.
You've been watching me ever since this afternoon my horse bolted. You've been looking at me the way you used to look when I was a kid and done something you thought was wrong.
We almost had a stampede today, Norm.
Almost.
You was riding front, man. You was the one to stop it.
I suppose you've never been on a horse that ran away with you.
You was always able to handle that Palomino before.
Why do you have to keep nagging? I'm no cattle man. I didn't want to come on this drive in the first place.
It's our herd.
It's your herd. It was up to me. Would have sold the ranch years ago.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe we ought to sell out. We'll talk about it when we get back home.
Hold up a minute. Thought it was my turn to look after the cattle tonight.
It's been a pretty hard day. You're probably tired. I'll wake you
up. I'm no more tired than you are.
Okay, Norm.
I'll be over on that hill over yonder.
Well, you're not serious, right, about selling out, are you?
There's something in what Norm says. He's no cattleman.
Well, maybe not, but you are.
I can always get work somewhere. Carrie would probably be happier in town anyway.
Carrie?
My wife.
Oh, I didn't know you were married, right?
Yep, last winter. She's staying with her folks in Bradley while we take the cattle north.
Is that so?
Carrie's a fine girl, Britt, younger than I am, about Norm's age. Young and pretty. You'll like her, everybody does. Yeah, even Norm. First time in my life him and me have ever agreed on anything or anybody.
Well,
she told me not to take him with us on this drive, said he'd never make it. I should have listened to her.
Well, he's pretty young, Rife. This is his first cattle drive. For all we know, his horse maybe did run away with him, you know?
Norm did the running, not his horse. He's no good, Britt. I guess it's my fault. I guess I bring him up wrong, but he's no good.
You're not his father. You're not to blame for how he turned out.
I'm the only father he ever had. Our old man died when Norm was just a baby, and Ma just lasted a couple years after that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was 13, practically full grown when she passed on, but Norm was only 4. She made me promise I'd look after him, see he got his schooling and a chance to mount to something. Fire's almost out.
Oh, here, I'll fix it.
I sent him to school, bought him books, but he wouldn't stick it out. It was too much like work. That's his real trouble, Britt. He's lazy. He's selfish. Expects everything to be handed to him all tied up in a fancy ribbon. Like this afternoon, he wasn't afraid of the cattle. He just couldn't be bothered stopping them. He didn't care that much.
Oh, maybe he's had it too easy, right? Maybe if the chips were down, he'd surprise you.
Maybe. Well, I'm not making the same mistake again. Not with my own kid.
With your own? What?
Yeah. Gary's expected. He might be here by now, for all I know.
Well, well, congratulations.
Thank you. I'll buy you a cigar and have
it. Yeah, all right. Oh, well, that's fine. Well, I guess maybe it's time to turn in, I think.
I ain't very sleepy. I think I'll go up and, well, see if Norm's all right. Oh, doggone it. Brady is my kid brother.
Sure. I know, right? Sure.
Good night.
Good night. I banked the fire for the night and spread out my bedroll. The moon came up, full moon, kind of a moon you ought to have after a rain. And I stretched out flat. Well, except for a couple of rocks right in the small of my back. Well, I felt about as comfortable as a man has a right to feel. Right?
No. Me.
Oh. I thought you were looking after the herd.
Rife come nosing around. Guess you don't trust me. So if he wants to stay up all night, that's his business.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, we got nothing but heroes on this drive.
How do you figure that?
Well, you're the six shooter, ain't you? Supposed to be the fastest man with a gun west of Kansas City. East of there, too, from the way folks tell it.
No, you shouldn't believe everything you hear, Norm.
I don't. I don't believe you any faster with a gun than the next man.
Probably not.
I don't believe you any faster than me. See that white rock over there? Well?
Well, good.
Go ahead. It's your turn.
Well, I'm afraid I'm sort of out of practice of shooting at rocks. I used to do it, but I haven't tried it recently.
What do you mean by that? I'm still a kid?
I didn't mean anything. You're a good shot. Now, good night.
Maybe you think it was an accident I hit it. I hit it. I can do it again. There. See that?
Good night.
Oh.
Didn't keep me from sleeping. And when I finally woke up, the sun was just starting to shove the sky away from over my head. A couple of seconds, I couldn't quite decide whether to open my eyes or not, but the smell of coffee made me make up my mind.
Oh! Morning.
Morning. Want some java?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Where's Norm?
Taking a bath.
Taking a bath?
Yeah. Found a water hole on the other side of the hill.
Oh.
He'll be back any minute. Trust Norm to keep himself duded up. Wouldn't surprise me if he showed up wearing a clean shirt.
Yeah.
Well, you can't blame a fellow for... Yeah, what's this? That looks like a letter. Oh, here, it's yours.
Mine?
Well, it says love, Carrie. Isn't that your wife's name,
Carrie? Yeah.
Yeah, well, here.
Read it to me, Britt.
What?
Out loud. Read me what it says.
Well, I'm not interested in somebody else's mail life, especially love letters.
Is that what it is?
Well, you ought to know. It's yours, isn't it?
No. No, but it ain't. Carrie ain't never written me. She knows I can't read. It's Norm that had the school, and remember, Britt, I told you last night.
Yeah, I remember.
Read me what it says. Go on, Britt, read it.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six shooter in a moment.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that public service announcement. Again, this is The Stampede. The original air date was the 4th of October, 1953.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Warming the back of my neck as I stood there facing life, holding that piece of lavender paper in my hand. I looked down at the letter and then up at Rife again. He was just standing there, waiting, not moving, but any part of him moving except the vein in his throat that jumped out in little throbs.
I'm waiting, Britt.
Now, it's not my letter, Rife, and I guess it isn't yours.
It concerns me, don't it? It's from Carrie. It's from my wife.
Well, that's between you and her.
I want to know what it says, what she's been writing to Norm about.
Go ahead, Britt. Read it to her. Oh, maybe you'd rather I told you what it says, Rife. It says Carrie loves me, that she'll always love me, and it goes into detail.
You rotten little...
Well, then we are, Rife. You think that gun will stop me? I'll break your neck.
You're walking right into it, Rife.
Now, put it away, Norm.
You wanted a sample of my shooting last night. You put that gun away and you'll get it.
What am I supposed to do? Take you both on?
This isn't my argument. It'll take three of us to get that herd to Abilene. I just want to be sure there'll be three of us to do it.
There ain't going
to
be three, Britt. You've taken everything from me. All your life you've taken everything, but you're not taking Carrie.
All right, that's enough, right? Come on now. I meant what I said about finishing that drive. Two men may not make it, and I'm going to be sure I'm not going to lose that money you promised me. Now, come on. Now, straighten up here.
What's the matter with you? Are you both able to ride now?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm able.
Norm, what about you?
Sure.
All right, now, come on. Let's get started. I dumped out the coffee and covered up the fire while Norm got the horses. We saddled up and got the herd underway. Norm moved out to the front and I stayed in the middle. Rife brought up the rear. I figured it'd be just as well if I stayed between them. I looked back a couple of times and whenever I did, I saw Rife staring at Norm, watching him, watching every move he made. But he didn't say a word. All day long, he didn't say a word. And then at supper time, Rife, he sat off one side, just pecking at his food. I noticed there's nothing wrong with Norm's appetite, though.
Any more beans?
Yeah, looks like you finished them up, Norm.
Oh?
You're kind of hungry tonight, huh?
Why not? Just a kid still doing my growing. At least that's what some people think.
Uh-huh. Well, as long as you're so full of energy, maybe you wouldn't mind looking after the cattle, huh?
Huh?
Well, you missed your turn last night, didn't you?
Say, you taking over this outfit, Ponson?
No. Just a suggestion.
I guess somebody's got to run things. Don't look like my brother's holding a very tight rein. See you in the morning.
Yeah. Come on, Rife. How about some shut-eye?
Okay.
Good night.
Night.
I waited till Rife dropped off, and I closed my eyes. I didn't sleep very long, though. About an hour later, something woke me up. At first, I thought it was a coyote. And then I saw Rife edging off through the brush. He Going somewhere, Ross?
Huh?
Kyle woke you up, too, huh?
Yeah.
That gun ain't gonna do much good if you're figuring on killing it, Rife.
What do you mean?
It's empty, Rife.
You ain't got no right to interfere.
Oh? I'm just thinking about that 10% of the herd.
I'm gonna kill him, Britt. You can't stop me. Nobody can.
He's your brother.
No, he ain't. Not anymore. Would a brother do what he did to me? I ain't never had anything I could really call my own. If he wanted something, he took it. I never stopped him. But Carrie is my wife. She belongs to me, and this time I'm going to stop him.
You'd better wait and talk it over with her.
I waited too long already. Why do you think she didn't want Norm to go with us on this drive? It wasn't because she was afraid he'd never make it. She wanted him there with her. And at a time like this, she's...
Easy, easy now, Ryan.
Probably want to take over the baby, too, when that comes along.
No, no, come on now, dear. You've got to get some sleep now. You'll feel better in the morning. No, come on now.
No, I won't feel better in the morning, Britt. I won't feel no better until... until I'm even with him.
I guess none of the three of us got much sleep that night. And by noontime the next day, that saddle of mine was a little harder than usual. I'd been sort of keeping my eye on Rife. He was still riding behind me. But the sun was getting hot, and I was kind of drowsy, so I just sort of jogged along for the next few miles, not paying much attention to anything or anybody. The scar hadn't given me a jolt. Easy, boy. Easy, easy now. I wouldn't have looked around, and I wouldn't have seen that we were coming into a gorge. It was very narrow, barely wide enough for the herd, and the rock walls jutted up at a sharp angle, too steep for a horse to climb. By the time I got my bearings, it was too late. This was just the kind of a place Rife was looking for. I couldn't see him now, but I knew he was doing the firing, and I knew why. He was trying to stampede the cattle. And there in the gorge, Norm wouldn't be able to get out of the way. There was no chance of getting back to stop Rife. All I could do was jam right into the middle of the herd. Come on, boy. Now, come on. Come on. Come on. Scar cut his way past a couple of steers. I tried to keep them under control, but the ones from the rear started pressing forward in earnest, and there just wasn't no holding the rest of them. And we was right in it now, a real stampede. This was Rife's way of killing his brother, and I wasn't so sure I was going to fare any better than Norm. A couple of the cows shoved against us, almost toppled us over. Scar was pretty certain to lose his footing before we could get much further, and I jerked out my gun. I cleared us a little path, but the cattle plugged up before we get through. All of my shooting was just making things worse. There was nothing to do now but just give Scar his head, let him run with it. I hadn't had time to worry about Norm. I didn't know what had happened to him. I didn't even think about him until it... Hey, that wasn't Rife firing. That wasn't Rife firing. That was from up ahead. Well, the herd was half crazy now. They'd been shot at from all directions. They didn't know where to turn now. I rose up in my stirrups and looked forward. Norm was holding his ground at the mouth of the gorge. He could have gotten away, all right, but he was holding his ground. Lifted myself up, maybe I would have been able to hang on when the cattle twisted around and started changing direction. As it was, Scar held his ground, flattened out behind a rock. I was the only thing to save my neck. I rolled under him. The cattle, as they swung around, started heading back to the water. Minutes I was in the clear. The cattle passed me by. I pulled myself up. Up to my feet and I looked around. The herd was still out of control. They're charging out the other end of the gorge. And then I got a flash of Rife. Norm must have heard it too. Pounding past me, firing at all the way, like a crazy man trying to get through to his brother. almost out of sight now before I saw Rife again. He was lying on the ground in a smear of sticky red dust, and Norm was there bending over him when I got up to him.
You all right, Rife?
I started him, Norm. I figured you'd try to get out of the way, but you didn't run. You stopped him. He stopped him, didn't he, Britt?
Yeah.
Yep. I didn't mean for him to turn on you, Rife. I swear I didn't.
I know that. I know I... I saw you trying to get through to me. Why did you want to help me, Norm? I started them so they'd kill you. Why did you want to help me?
You're my brother. You're all I've got, all I've ever had.
You hear that, Britt? You don't hate me?
Rife, listen. About Carrie. About that letter.
It's all right, Norm. I don't blame you. I don't blame Carrie.
But she loves you, Rife. That letter was written a long time ago, before you and her were married, before she even knew you.
A long time ago?
Yeah, I've carried it with me ever since. I was in love with her, but she wasn't in love with me, not ever. And when you come along, she realized that she's never had anything to do with me since. I only kept the letter so that I could show it to you, and you got to riding me the way you did yesterday.
You're telling the truth.
You know I am, don't you?
Yeah, I guess I do.
Sure.
I guess I've known it all along. When Carrie told me about us having a baby, I was so happy and proud it almost spilled over. I guess a man couldn't feel that way if he wasn't sure of his wife.
Take it easy, Rife. Now, don't try talking too much.
What's the matter with you, Britt? You think them cattle finished?
No, of course not.
You said it'd take all three of us to get to Abilene. That's the way it's going to be. All three of us.
Sure.
You and Norm and me. It'd be a while before I can get on my legs, but you just give me a couple of hours rest while you're rounding up the herd. A couple of hours and I'll be around to...
Rife.
He's dead, Norm.
But he can't be. He was feeling better. You heard him.
Well, a man don't always know when he's dying, Norm. Sometimes a man's lucky.
Britt,
yeah.
Only kids that cry, ain't it? I guess this makes me a kid.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Norm. I'd say you've done a lot of growing up today. We buried Rife there at the mouth of the gorge and went off to round up the cattle again. We managed to find most of them, and about a week later we hit Abilene. All during that week, I kept wanting to ask Norm about that letter from Carrie, if it was true what he told Rife, if it really had been written a couple of years ago. But somehow, I don't know, the subject never came up. Leastwise, I never found a good time for bringing it up. Besides, it really wasn't any of my business.
Beginning tomorrow night, Fibber McGee.